The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, Stockbridge. Also watching us on the PCTV Select app and on 1301 Access Pittsfield on your cable dial. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It's Thursday, May 28th. And you know, if it's Thursday and you hear Sean on the radio, you've only got one more day of the work week. So that's not a bad thing. Glad to be here with you. And thanks for joining us as always. Got a great show coming up for you this morning. We have Pete White. He is the City Council Vice President and Councilor at Large here in the city of Pittsfield. Been a while since we had Pete White here on the show, talking to him about everything going on in the city. Looking forward to that conversation. Lots to talk about. There's a budget season going on right now. They're kind of right in the middle of it, so we'll talk about that and other things happening in the city as well. First, let's get to our weather forecast, see what we've got in store for us. Coming up from the National Weather Service, here it goes. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Lows in the lower 50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny. Night is warm with highs in the upper 60s. North wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly clear in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Lows in the upper 40s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. And a couple of nice spring days coming up. I think I'm looking out the window right now of the WTBR studio, and I'm seeing mostly blue skies with some clouds out there. Very nice morning getting right now. It's about 55 degrees, getting up to the lower 70s, maybe upper 60s, lower 70s today. Not too bad. We'll take that any day of the week. We are going to get a little bit of rain rolling in here and there over the course of the weekend into Monday, I hear. But for the most part, you know, We can take this, right? Good morning, Pete White. How are you?
Good morning, Sean. What would a weekend be without rain lately?
Well, you know, just the Memorial Day weekend was tough, wasn't it? Except for that last part of Monday. That was pretty much the only really nice part of that weekend, weather-wise.
We were lucky that it was mostly drizzling during the Memorial Day parade and ceremony. It was mostly dry. And, yeah, the rest of the day was nice. You know, over the weekend we went out to Shelburne Falls, checked out a flea market, and did some. On Sunday we checked that out and did some antiquing.
Yeah.
You know, what else are you going to do when it's raining?
Indoor things, right?
Yeah.
Driving things, indoor things, yeah. Not much you can do with the weather that we had. And it was just cold and damp and rainy and unsettled, I think, is the best word for that. But, you know, it was a three-day weekend, so I think anyone will take that as well. But that may have doused some plans out there, certainly for that weekend. So lots of things going on this time of the year, as usual. So we picked a good time to have you come here on the show. And I guess the big thing going on the city council right now is that you're right smack dab in the middle of budget season. Right? You have five budget sessions going on this year, and you've gotten through two of them. Now you've got another one tonight.
Yeah, one of the most important things city councilors do is, you know, review and then approve the mayor's budget.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it can be a little tedious, five nights going over details, going over what's known as the Munis report. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at, you know, what money came in, what money has been spent, where are budgets at this point of the year. You know, have they spent the money they said they needed,
mm-hmm.
Which often goes into the decisions when you see cuts made or, you know, reductions proposed. It's because if somebody has a budget that, you know, said they were going to spend $5,000 and they've spent like $1,000 of it, you know, we need to question, you know, why did you ask for that? And, you know, if the mayor didn't reduce it this year, which most of them have been reduced,
mm-hmm.
you know, why, how do you justify still having that amount of money in an account you didn't use? Or, you know, we talk about interdepartmental transfers that happened earlier in the year and really get into the, you know, details of, you know, a large budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just give us a bit of an overview, too. So it's the city council's job to review the mayor's budget. But the only thing that the city council can do when it reviews each individual line item is propose a cut to that line item, right? There is no way that a city council can authorize an increase to a line item.
We cannot authorize an increase. You know, by law, the only thing we can do is reduce. We could reject a budget, send it back to the mayor, mm-hmm. and, you know, request that a mayor put more money in. It rarely happens. Mm-hmm. I've seen it done, like, maybe for a fire engine
mm-hmm.
At one point that we really needed that then Councillor Marchetti was able to, you know, make happen. We can, there is a procedure that can happen to increase the school budget.
Mm-hmm.
However, as long as I can remember, been over net school spending and budgets have been tight, and, you know, the school department passed a budget they feel they can get through. So mm-hmm. I, you know, it's not something many municipalities use, mm-hmm. but that's the only area where if we thought a mayor came through and just didn't fund a school budget well enough. But in this year, you know, they cut $4 million out of that budget. They closed or retired Morningside School. Mm-hmm. They've done consolidations. They've really made changes. So that budget was, you know, scrutinized but very difficult if we were to make any reductions.
So how would you characterize this year's budget process just from a standpoint? You've seen quite a few of them in your tenure on the city council. Some I would assume are easier than others to manage. This year it seems like you're dealing with a lot more sort of the money isn't there kind of situations, right? You go in knowing that there just isn't the money and that cuts will have to be made no matter what. So I assume then that maybe the city council isn't in quite a mood to go and cut further than that.
We're still doing our job of looking if there are further reductions to be made, mm-hmm. because we know that this year's bad, but next year could be worse. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things coming down. There's a ballot question of changing the you know, tax rate for the state, which could be devastating to municipalities. So we're carefully looking at each budget. But yeah, this is a budget where when it came in, it already had, I think, a 2.5% decrease in most areas. Mm-hmm. The mayor had to reduce by around $1 million or more just coming into it, maybe two. So we're already seeing the reductions mm-hmm. being made before they got to us.
And in addition to that, you've got some headwinds on the other side, which is increased costs in certain areas, right? So there are big things like health insurance, which everybody can identify with. Health insurance always goes up, it seems like, more than the cost of inflation. The last time that we've ever had a health insurance increase of around 2.5 or 3%, I mean, that's just never happened, right? This year it's like 9% higher than last year.
Yeah, the health insurance costs is constantly going up. You know, you see that everywhere.
And that's a real squeeze, right?
It is, because you need to provide health care in Massachusetts mm-hmm. if you're a business over 11 employees,
mm-hmm.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the right thing to do. I wish that we could go to single payer where we're not putting it on just the business and that people weren't, you know, keeping jobs or worrying about jobs as much based on the health care they can get through it. You know, I wish we would untie that. I think we'd be a pun intended, healthier state if we did that, and mm-hmm. definitely a healthier nation if we weren't so worried about employment being tied to health care.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anywhere you can look where costs aren't going up. You know, we just saw the water and sewer increases, the water rate by mm-hmm. 7% and the sewer by 6.4.
Yeah.
And that is largely to do with costs going up. It costs more for the chemicals. It mm-hmm. costs more for employee contracts. Mm-hmm. Just everything across the board is going up, whether that's directly related to tariffs or not. We still have to make sure that we pay for everything. We have to provide clean water going into the taps, going through our systems, and we have to make sure the water is clean when it goes back into the environment.
Right.
So there's no way around those. So, you know.
Yeah, there's some basic things that we expect from our local government, our state government, our federal government. One of the things for local is certainly having good, clean water and a working sewer system. So you can't mess around with that. But it still hurts people, no doubt, to have those costs go up at a large rate. I know I've spoken with the Public Utilities Commissioner Ricardo Morales many times about this issue, and it sounds like structurally some of that now has been worked out so that we're not seeing those huge increases that we were sort of faced with for a while, where you know you could see water and sewer rates go up 30-40% in a year, which really is untenable for most people. So even though these are increases, it seems like they are at least planning for the future and keeping the systems online and working.
Yeah, for a good portion of, you know, my time on the city council, that tactic was used so, you know, everyone wanted to pass the buck down the road and not increase. And, you know, we're saving the ratepayer money. We're saving the ratepayer money. But, you know, as you mentioned, we weren't really saving anything because you got walloped at the end with the 40% increase. This way, it's a more at least budgetable method. I'm not saying that people are not suffering, but we have to pay for the utility to stay running. It's the same as the electric company, but on a more local level where you actually get to see and talk to the people running it, and you know it's, you know, being ran as efficiently as possible. If you go out and check out the, you know, the facilities, they're ran pretty tightly. You know, we have good employees, but if we want to keep those good employees, we also have to pay them.
Yeah.
You know, it's same in the private sector. Nobody wants to work for free, and everyone wants to get what the going rate is. We have to make sure that we stay competitive with our salaries so we don't lose everyone. We don't want to be training somebody to be the best in their field just for them to go one town over and make, you know, $5, $10, $20 more an hour.
And it costs money to have turnover, right, in employees. That's one thing. It may not be a number you can point to on a spreadsheet somewhere and say that's what it costs us. But just the fact that if you've got turnover, you've got new people coming in, the costs of bringing them on board, the cost of training them, the cost of bringing experience that they need to the job, all those things are very difficult for organizations, which I guess is why you do want to pay them correctly and appropriately. There was recently a salary study conducted, from what I understand. Talk about that a little bit, and you know, are we paying city employees appropriately? Is there a way to bring some of their salaries up while at the other end of the spectrum, you know, still keeping the budget in line?
We're still talking about a salary study that's been done. You know, our human resources department director Taylor and Kate Rickard are phenomenal employees. They've known for years that we lose people because of our salaries. So the salary study was started. We're still, I think they're still going over all the numbers to be presented and everything. But, you know, in the end, we're not probably paying, you know, competitive, or at least we're competitive, but we're not the top in the area. And we need to look at what that means of, you know, can we be more competitive to keep employees so we're not paying to train others for other towns, you know, because every time somebody leaves, we, you know, all their training dollars basically go with them. So we're going to be looking at that deeply. You know, the mayor, while negotiating contracts, I believe had all of that in mind and making sure that, you know, we can get to a place where we can be fair to the taxpayers, but also keep the employees that provide all the services that people want done. You know, there are some things that people call frivolous that maybe we could or not take out of the budget. However, there are just as many people who really enjoy those services. You know, I think the biggest budget saver that I've seen since I've been on the council is the switch from unlimited trash at the curb to the toters. You know, but we could really quantify that in the first year. But now that's part of our operational budget that we're saving that money. So, you know, we could say we're still saving probably $500,000 or whatever on by having the toters.
And it would be exponential too, right? So if the change hadn't gone through, you could follow that chart path up and say this is where we would be. if we hadn't implemented that program.
Yeah,
and therefore, if we're up there, then we're also not able to fund some of these other priorities that we're talking about.
Correct. And we are seeing that recycling rates are going up. So the toters have worked. More people are putting recycling properly into the recycling bins, which costs us less to get rid of. Mm. It's not that recycling is free. It's right. Just it's got a lower tipping fee than trash. Mm.
Pete White is my guest here this morning. He is a city council vice president and councilor at large here in the city of Pittsfield. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. And so along those lines, still talking about the budget, certainly you mentioned net school spending. So first of all, I want to explore what that concept is for people that don't know, because it's a term that gets thrown around a lot. There's certainly the school budget here in Pittsfield is funded in many different ways, some of which comes from directly from local taxes, property taxes, local receipts, things like that. But a good chunk of it comes from the state, from the Chapter 70 funding, right? It's like 60 or 70% funded by the state, or maybe it's higher. I don't know. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but it's a significant chunk. And then there's something called net school spending, which is a floor, a basement. Explain that to us and why it's important.
Net school spending, as you're saying, is the floor of what a municipality has to pay into to meet, you know, the requirements to continue to get Chapter 70, I believe.
Okay.
And Pittsfield is usually significantly higher than what net school spending is, because we do value education. We go over it every year. Mm-hmm. We're always above net school spending because we value, you know, our future. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to make sure that we're spending the dollars where they need to be spent, while also, you know, not overburdening the taxpayers, which I'll keep saying, but they, you know, feel like they're overburdened anyway, because right now everyone is strapped for funding, and, you know, it's just not a good, we're not in good economic times right now. Everyone's struggling, and you know, I hate to get into national politics, but you know,
it does affect us.
We're not getting any help from the top with tariffs and everything else, rising in prices, you know, war in the Middle East causing gas prices to go up, which also causes the city to have to pay more whenever we're doing anything. So there's just this perfect storm of things going on that are just rising prices, and we're just trying to make sure the city operates. And this budget, you know, was put together pretty conservatively. And if you look at different line items, anyone who wants to go to pittsfieldma.gov, scroll down to the bottom, can look at the entire budget. They can see where everything is spent, and they'll see in the proposed budget, which is all there, where some budgets have been, you know, cut by the 2.5%, and other budgets, you know, may look like they've had raises, but really compared to what it would have been if it was a complete rise from last year, is really, you know, more level funding in some areas, and some areas you're contractually obligated to increase, and then fixed costs, you know, with sewer and water, you got to make sure those chemicals are the right ones and at the right amounts, so we're putting safe drinking water into the system.
And you don't get a lot of choice as far as, you know, you need to buy the chemicals. You need to have them, whatever cost, whatever charge they're charging at that moment, that's what you have to pay. You can probably, you know, get into some cost savings in terms of buying in bulk and putting out to bid and things like that. But at the end of the day, if the chemicals are going to cost a certain amount, they're going to cost a certain amount. If you need a certain number of them, you're just going to have to buy those, right?
Yeah. And, you know, since you mentioned going out to bid, there's also a state list of products and services that don't have to go out to bid because, you know, the state's really done the due diligence of putting the list together, and they have vendors that are charging a reasonable price across the board, and some of those things don't have to be bid out. You know, you'll always hear that people want everything bid out, but in this area, there's not always a lot of companies or service providers bidding on the things that we would put out there. You know, we do put RFPs out when we have to. You know, and I'm grateful as a city councilor that we have amazing city staff that does all that legwork.
It is a lot of work. right? Putting things out to bid. And I mean, it's part of the job, no doubt about it. But it would be much easier to pick up the phone and just buy something like a lot of people do when they walk in the supermarket, right? Sometimes you're like, well, am I going to go to Big Y Price Chopper and Stop and Shop to find out what the best price is on cornflakes? Or since I'm here at Price Chopper, I'm just going to go buy the cornflakes, right? I mean, just that's what happens sometimes. But you know, it is a lot more legwork.
And I think that's the same in our own lives. It's a lot easier just to pick the price that's there in front of you than to have like three bids come in on something. You know, if you were doing that for cereal, you might spend more in gas just driving around to the different places.
That's right. And we don't even want to talk about gas. Back to the school budget for a minute, because this year the school committee faced $4+ million deficit, a gap of funding. Most of that, I think, seemed to be connected to sort of a quirk of state funding for schools. What particular division of funding reimbursement we're in? There was a stage 10 and a stage 11 based on the wealth of our community and how needy our families and our students are. And we were in group number 11 for a couple of years, which gained quite a bit more money for our schools. And then this year, for whatever numerical reason, we dropped back to 10. And then that cut a certain amount of money. There was not enough money, certainly, it sounds like, on the city side to just hand over to the schools and say, well, we know you're $4 million short, so here you go. You're all set. You don't have to worry about it. So it seemed like that was the department out of all departments in the city that took the biggest hit and had to make some very hard decisions about what to do with that gap.
Yeah, the school department definitely had to make difficult choices. You know, I went to Morningside Community School, K through 5. Mm.
Lived in the Morningside neighborhood for most of your life, right?
Yeah, it was only about probably 10, 11 years ago that I moved over to, like, you know, the Route 20 mm-hmm. west side of Pittsfield.
Yep.
And Morningside is a community that I care deeply about, and that, you know, I followed the meetings very closely of what was going on, but that's been discussed for years mm-hmm. that eventually something had to be done with Morningside. You yeah. couldn't just put up walls at Morningside and Conti, because then you make bad airflow,
right?
And you have a sick building, which you've talked about on the air a few times.
Yeah.
You know, so taking that building offline and retiring it was a hard decision that had to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I respect the school committee for holding several meetings. A lot of the public, I think, feels that those were performative, where I look at it as they were really listening to what the public will need mm-hmm. or does need if that school was to be retired. And it wasn't to say, you know, the decision hadn't been already made. I think, you know, the decision was made when the vote was taken.
Mm-hmm.
Could have gone either way. But when you looked at numbers and when you looked at, you know, population of Pittsfield, population of our schools, you know, we've been at the same number of schools since I think early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our population has gone down by, 20,000 from the GE mm-hmm. days, but we've kept the 8 elementary schools, 2 middle and 2 high.
Right.
So it's about time that we start right-sizing our schools. I would have liked to it have not been just because we're in a tight budget year, but I also think that was only one piece of it. I think it's just they finally had somebody new in the superintendent's seat that really looked at it and said, look, the wise thing to do right now is to start consolidating.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason Morningside was probably looked at is the building, Crosby, Conti, and Morningside were the ones that haven't had major renovations. They're basically the same buildings that were put in when they were put in.
Right.
And if we were going to just sink money into a project, it should be a project that has long-term benefits for the students and the community, which mm-hmm. the new Crosby will combine Conti and Crosby. So you wouldn't look at closing either of those schools, mm-hmm. considering we're already in the pipeline to have Crosby rebuilt. So Morningside became the logical choice. And I'm hoping that all of those meetings that they held, you know, really made all the decisions that are being made now with the redistricting and also the community things that will need to be put in place to take out what the school was providing for the community. Mm-hmm. The mayor has already made a commitment that there will be community space with whatever the building is used for next. Mm.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, too, about that school, is that it being a community school model, it was more than just a building, right? And knowing that it was centrally located, I think of all the schools and where they're located in Pittsfield, and Morningside is probably the most centrally located, serving that core of students that are, you know, maybe walkers, maybe families don't have the resources that some of the folks in other schools do to be able to get picked up and dropped off and, you know, activities and things like that. That was a very community-oriented school. It brought people in and together. And I think that's the thing, I think, that most people were afraid of losing. It did seem like the budget part of it was the tipping point. It wasn't the only thing that was going on. Certainly, it's been a struggling school academically for many years. I don't know. What's your opinion about that? Closing this school, will that then also help raise the sort of test scores and the performance and the outcomes for students when they're now distributed to four new elementary schools?
Closing Morningside isn't going to be a magic wand for those who are struggling. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood, the people there, you know, everything we're doing to try to bring in better jobs, have better housing options, you know, school lunches being free, school breakfasts being offered, mm-hmm. those things, you know, are all pieces of the puzzle. It wasn't just the open classrooms that caused lower test scores. Mm-hmm. It was really, you know, a transient neighborhood, also families that are struggling. You know, teachers can only do so much in school hours. Mm-hmm. What I'm hoping is, and, you know, I'm haven't gone to school, I don't have a doctorate in education or anything else, but what I'm really hoping is when you don't have so many students in one place struggling, that when they're spread out to, you know, schools that aren't, you know, right next door, but they're not terribly far, you know, we're not the hill towns, you know, where people are on the bus for an hour or two in the morning. Right. We're still a relatively small city. Mm-hmm. You know, neighborhood schools started going out a long time ago, and these are just, you know, we're having that next phase of it. Mm. It's not going to be the magic wand, but I do hope that we see test scores improve, because those students who are struggling are not going to be in a classroom of students who are struggling. And they're going to be able to hopefully identify them more, get the direct savings. You know, closing Morningside didn't close the entire gap. Mm-hmm. You know, it maybe saved around $948,000, I think, mm-hmm. Was the number that they were originally talking.
Ultimately, after you put in place all the other things you have to do to spend money in the other schools, right, to support that.
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. you know, they are keeping teachers on. They're going to increase the services at the other schools. So I'm really hoping that this is turned into a positive for the students who are being relocated, and also the other schools. You know, I think they'll welcome the meerkats in. You know, it's going to be sad. You know, I've got a pair of meerkat socks that I would always wear when I went into Reed at the school, and I'll probably wear them if I go into Reed at one of the other schools that, you know, some of the meerkats are going to be at. But there was no way to retire, close a school, and not have it affect certain classes. You couldn't phase it out to where, you know, you just let the classes that were there end, because there would always be new classes coming in, or you'd be wasting money on a partially used building. Yeah. So,
and then this year, of course, also coincides with the restructuring of the middle grade education, of changing that from, and as anyone has been paying attention knows, that the fifth and sixth grades next year will be housed at Herberg, formerly Herberg Middle School. I don't know what it'll be called next year. And then the seventh and eighth grades will all be at Reed Middle School. Maybe that'll be Reed Junior High. Who knows what that'll be called. But that's a major significant change. And of course, that means also that all the fifth grade classes who are now currently fourth graders at all of our elementary schools will all be heading to Herberg, right? So that's another big change. How do you feel that that is that a forward-looking move for the public schools? Is that something that's going to create some positive outcomes here?
I don't know if I would definitely call it forward thinking, because it should have been done a while ago, because we've been losing so many of our schools to school choice around the middle school level. Middle school is what most parents I hear, you know, that's when they're choicing out. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping by having this fourth and fifth at Herberg and the sixth and seventh at Reed that we're really going to, you know, have a change.
Fifth and sixth, seventh and eighth.
Fifth and sixth, seventh and eighth. Yes. Yes. Sorry.
It's okay.
It's other numbers in my head. Yeah. Fifth and sixth at Reed, seventh and eighth at Herberg. I think that's going to be huge, or whichever way that goes. Yeah. I'm not on the school committee, so, you know, I'm kind of talking on their side of things, but I definitely support the idea. And I really hope to see parents see the change that'll allow them to want their students to come back to our Pittsfield Public Schools, because we have top-notch teachers. The administration does everything they can to make sure we're getting a good education for what we pay. And I really hope that it's that change that starts bringing all of those dollars and students back to Pittsfield, because every time a student leaves, the money follows them to another district. When as many students are leaving, we're taking dollars out of what could be spent here in Pittsfield by the state to improve things for everyone in Pittsfield and sending it to another community.
Right.
But parents make the best decision. I would never fault a parent for doing what's best for their child for many reasons. And we just have to, you know, continue to support and make improvements.
It will be a big change, and we'll have to see how that all works out. Certainly a lot of people going through a transition over the next few months as they prepare to send their children maybe to a different building than they were expecting. However, we'll certainly see more equity in some of that, because everyone will have the same experience going forward from fifth grade on. So that'll be very interesting to see. Pete White, we've got to take our top of the hour break right now, and we'll do our station ID and thank our underwriters and all kinds of good stuff, and we'll be back with more conversation with City Council Vice President Peter White in just a moment. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Still paying for that monthly gym membership? How about that streaming service you never watch? Why not support WTBR-FM instead? For just $8.97 a month, you could show your support for our community radio station today. Go to WTBRFM.com and click donate. It's as easy as that. We need to support this station to keep it on the air, and every little bit helps. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
What would it be like not having PCTV's reliable coverage of our Pittsfield City meetings? Well, the answer is it would be like driving in the darkness without headlights. We need the light to show us exactly what's coming our way. PCTV's coverage is that light. It's so reliable and dependable, we don't even think about not having it, but nothing can be taken for granted. Support this building block of democracy today. It's too important to lose, especially now. Pittsfield Community Television, see it all, decide for yourself.
Hey, this is Dave Cachet, the archivist of the WTBR-FM Vinyl Library. Tune in Saturday mornings at 9 for Random Draw, a trip through the vinyl archives of WTBR. I'll take you back in time to when these records were brand new. Each week, I'm going to pick a random spot in the vast record library of WTBR and pull out a bunch of great vinyl to play for you. That's right, an hour's worth of random songs with that rich vinyl sound, just the way you remember them. That's Random Draw, every Saturday morning at 9, only on WTBR.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Sandrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge on the PCTV Select app. You can watch this wonderful Morning Drive program, and you can watch us also on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301 on your cable dial. Pete White is my guest here this morning. He's the City Council Vice President and Councilor at Large here in the city of Pittsfield, and we'll be back to that conversation in just a moment. First, one more look at the weather forecast this morning from the National Weather Service. Here it is.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, partly cloudy. Lows in the lower 50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, sunny. Not as warm with highs in the upper 60s. North wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly clear in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Lows in the upper 40s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have your forecast, and nice bright blue sunny skies out there I see with some clouds this morning, and right now at about 56 degrees I'm seeing. Looking at the thermometer, it's not bad out there, kind of a nice spring day. We will have, I guess, by Monday, some showers, maybe something on Saturday. I don't know. I'm not a weatherman. Don't listen to me. Whatever I said, just trust your eyes, look out the window, and you'll know what the weather is. All right, Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM. Pete White here, my guest on the show. Thanks again, Pete, for coming in and talking to us about all the things going on in the city.
Always a pleasure, and I was just looking. It's a little too early for me to get my Berkshire weather update from Jacob on email. So I'm in the dark with you.
Yeah, and Jacob, of course, did a great job with us for a couple of years here at WTBR, creating a morning weather forecast for us. That's a lot of work for a volunteer, but he did a great job.
Yeah, he's a really, really smart young adult. And I know he's getting ready to wrap up his PHS career, and I just want to wish him luck with everything he does in his future. Mm. I think he would have made a phenomenal member of the school committee, as well as some of our other new members, but really just wish him well. He's got a lovely family, know his dad pretty well, mm-hmm. who also ran for city council.
Right.
So I think we're lucky that we still have good people wanting to serve.
That's always a challenge, right? Especially these days. And everyone I interview, that is a big deal. Every volunteer position in the county, I'm hearing from fire departments to town boards and councils and things like that, where, you know, most of this work is done by volunteers in the community. And those folks, it seems to be, are harder and harder to find. And these positions are staying open.
I think with social media and the scrutiny that everyone goes through, a lot of people just don't want to put themselves or their families through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen it recently with the city council voting to not have our addresses as easily accessible. Mm-hmm. You know, we started seeing it last year where people didn't want to give their name and address at the open mic portion, but it was in our council rules, so I had to enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that we've eliminated that. So now when anybody wants to speak at open mic, all they have to say is the community they're from, which I think is a lot safer when people are coming up talking about more difficult topics. And we always know how to get a hold of somebody after. If they want to talk to us, they can shoot us an email or something else. It's
but
not
basically
that word.
It's doxing, right? This
yeah.
is a fairly new word for a lot of us to think about, but the idea that you can wreak havoc on someone's life if you know their contact information, where they live, what they do, and you can really, you know, ruin a good portion of their lives with that if you so intended to do.
Yeah, and for me, if somebody, you know, for the first time during one of the debates last year, we had somebody threaten they were going to come and picket our houses if we voted in a certain way. Now, to me, I'd invite you in for a coffee, you know, let's have a soda, let's have a water, you know, sit back on the deck, let's talk about your issue. However, my mom, wouldn't be as inclined. You know, I'm barely, you know, home. I'm at a meeting or I'm at my day job, which most people still don't understand. We have day jobs that pay the bills. And then we use city council as an extra activity that does pay, but it's usually not enough for anyone to actually live off of.
Certainly not.
But my mom doesn't need people picketing out in front of our house. You know, people with families, their kids don't need to be seeing that. I don't think any of us are hiding. We're available by email, phone, community events, and places that it's appropriate to talk to somebody when they're working. You know, if you didn't like, you know, the burger you got at a burger restaurant, you wouldn't be going to the chef's house to say, hey, I didn't like that burger. You wouldn't be, you know, inconveniencing their families. So I think it's extremely important that we know that all city councilors and elected officials live in the communities that they're serving. And if you're not seeing an elected official out and you feel like you can't get a hold of them, I don't think having their address should change that. It should be changed at the ballot box. And if somebody's just inaccessible, don't vote for them again.
Yeah, I guess it's about appropriateness, and we're losing some of that, I feel like, in some ways in our society. It's not just a Pittsfield thing. It's certainly happening nationwide. There's a lack of decorum, if you will. And decorum is one of those things that allows us to get stuff done. I hate to say it. And the louder that you are, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to somehow be more effective. And that's just a little commentary. We'll leave that there. But one of the things I did want to ask about is open mic, period. Now, this is something that city council and school committee both have. It came up last night during the school committee meeting, a question about whether when someone comes up to the open mic and gets their 3 minutes of time to speak, if they ask a question, right, which it's a 3 minute time period where the person can sit there and or stand there and say anything they want, ask any questions, but it isn't an interactive session, right? There isn't a mechanism or a procedure whereby any questions that someone poses at that open mic session can be answered in real time by the council or by the school committee. Is there any reason why we should change that?
Yes and no. I'm going to go stronger with no. Because of we all have to follow the state's open meeting law.
Right.
And if you start introducing topics that weren't on the agenda, you've broken the open meeting law.
So if you start debating or discussing something that wasn't on the agenda, and the whole point of an agenda and publishing it 48 hours in advance and whatever is so the public knows what will be discussed, right?
Exactly.
And so therefore someone could come prepared to discuss something. And then also the public would know that something, a decision could be made because the agenda item is there in advance.
Yes. And also, I think we need to look at the roles of the city council and the school committee. I think Dr. Phillips did a great job last night talking about how some questions are not appropriate for answering in a public forum like that.
Yeah.
If two students were to be mentioned, the parent might have the right to bring up their own student, but they don't have a right to talk about the other student. And I think there are times and places for everything. I know I take notes during open mic. I know other counselors do, especially our ward counselors. They're the ones who wish there was something in place where they knew where everyone lived coming up to the open mic because they want to be able to say, hey, I heard your issue and I want to do something about it. I know I've seen almost every ward counselor either before a meeting when they see one of their constituents or they get a hold of them after the meeting to whatever ward-specific, neighborhood-specific question comes up, they're trying to get an answer for them. And if it's just a citywide topic, one of the at-large counselors is usually trying to get a hold of them. Or the mayor will go and, you know, either send a department head or go over himself and just give some contact information to the person. So I think open mic is a good way to have things brought up that we might not have otherwise heard about. But if it's something that warrants discussion, it should be put on the next agenda. And if you get into question and answer periods, if you get into open mics that last forever, you don't get to the main purpose of the business meeting to get things approved so the city can, you know, approve funding for something or move forward with a project. And That is where contacting counselors and school committee members by email, phone, or in other venues is an option. Talk to us after the meeting, before the meeting. I don't think having open mic becoming a back and forth is a productive way to use the meetings. If you wanted to set up a forum, I think you could post it in another way. But with the way open meeting law is continually being interpreted in different ways, even showing up for a forum to listen, if more than a quorum speaks, you could be going against open meeting law. So I think that, you know, the state really needs to look at ways of expanding elected officials' ability to communicate with the public while not being behind closed doors. Everything should be out in the open and discussed, you know, in a way that people can get to it. But, you know, we go back to decorum and social media. But also with social media, you have to watch out that there's not a quorum of an elected body on a thread, or it's an open meeting law violation where people think that we don't want to communicate on social media. I enjoy communicating with people on social media, but I've had to change the way I've done it to make sure that I'm in line with the way the state has written laws to make sure that everything is documented.
It can be a very effective tool, obviously. And, you know, the positive sides of social media is that more topics get discussed, and you've kind of, you get the idea of what people are talking about, what they're passionate about, what they're concerned about, all those things. Just like an open microphone section of a meeting also allows elected officials to understand what's going on. Sometimes it seems like, though, people are using that as a way to short circuit the system. So the city council, the school committee, they're governance bodies, right? They're not administration. They're not executive function. They're legislative function, essentially. So if people have concerns, shouldn't they be first going and taking those first steps to either go on the school side to the principal, to the administration, the superintendent, before they jump over and go to the school committee directly? And, you know, isn't that a more effective way of handling some of these things? I understand if someone has an issue where they're frustrated and they've tried all those things and they can't get anywhere, it makes total sense to go and jump to that level. But shouldn't people be working on solving those problems at a different level?
Sean, I'm glad you went there. Dr. Phillips brought that up last night during the school committee debate on this, and you're absolutely correct. There are proper channels to be taken. Not everyone knows them. So the elected official in many ways becomes that liaison that helps connect you with the proper place if you don't know what it is. You know, when you have newer members of a body, it can be more difficult because they're still learning. You know, one of my favorite things about being a more seasoned city councilor, another word for old, is that newer counselors can say, hey, how would you handle this? Who would you talk to? What's the best way to get the response my constituent needs? Because none of us are up there for ourselves. At least we shouldn't be. You know, we're up there because we're trying to make our city better. We're trying to help our neighbors. And we're just putting in a little extra time to be able to do that, to learn the ways about it. But, you know, during an open meeting, you know, the city council doesn't have all the answers. The school committee doesn't have all the answers. With this, you know, with the school committee, it's a little different because you have most of the administration at every meeting. So some more questions could be answered, but it's not the forum to be answering them. And I know Dr. Phillips and her team, they all write down what's going on when questions arise. And, you know, if you had something where, you know, okay, take my card at open mic, you know, get a hold of me this way, is a much better way to get solid answers than trying to fit them into a 3-minute open mic or even a dialogue. But we enjoy people coming. You know, we don't want to, I don't want to eliminate open mic. I think it's one of the most valuable tools that we have. And I think it's important that it's before our meeting because people get to come and tell us what they think about the things we're voting on that night. Now, have they read the 150 to 500-page agenda that goes along with it? Not always.
No.
And that's why we're elected to do more work on these issues and also to be able to explain the nuances to people who might not necessarily see it as a good thing or a bad thing for the city. Like we've, you know, when we making, when we're making our decisions, it's based on so much more information than the one little piece that makes it onto the agenda.
Yeah. Pete White is our guest here this morning on Morning Drive. He is the City Council Vice President and Councilor at Large here in the City of Pittsfield. The Vice President, typically the parliamentarian, if you will, of the as the meeting is running, right? The person who sort of knows the rules, knows how things are supposed to run to have an effective meeting. And so I just want to talk about that a little bit. Certainly there have been some issues, not this year at the city council level. Seems like those meetings are running effectively and straightforward, and everybody sort of knows how things go. You know, if you have the floor, you speak, then you relinquish the floor. The chair recognizes someone else to speak. They speak. They go around a couple times. They see if everybody's had their say, what they want to say, and then they vote. And then there are sometimes when you get into too much debate, you call a question, right? When you call the question, all debate stops and you vote on whether you should have more debate or whether you should then vote on the question, right? Those are some sort of basic rules of how to run a meeting. If anyone's watched meetings, you know that that is the way that it's supposed to run. That seems to be falling down a little bit on the school's committee side right now, that there's a little bit more chaos going on with how the meetings are run and whether things are running effectively. How does that work?
I think when you have a body that's coming together with several new members, it takes time to learn the nuanced rules. Moving the question or calling the question is supposed to end all debate, and you take an immediate vote on whether or not debate continues, or do you just take the vote?
Right.
I think when you have people who are trying to also let everyone's be heard, and you have a body that may not know every single, you know, piece of Robert's rules for the school committee or Demeter's rules for the city council, it can be frustrating for those watching that do know it. Mm. There's not many courses you can take on, you know, Robert's rules or Demeter's rules when you take an elected position in the city. And, you know, we go over the major ones. Mm. But I think after something like that, moving the question, I think everyone's going to hopefully become up to speed on it. Mm. So the next time it's used, and I don't like to see it used often. I don't like to see debate ending, but there are some times where, okay, we've gone around and around and around. Mm-hmm. Somebody calls the question. Mm-hmm. After a decent amount of debate, hopefully everyone's talked that wants to, but there are times where you just need to move on. Mm-hmm. I think the school committee will get there. I think we're just, you know, we have newer people. I'm happy that we had people who, you know, stepped up and wanted to serve. You know, these on the school committee and city council are not professional politicians. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not elected officials for life.
Right. As we discussed earlier today.
I've been around longer because, you know, the public keeps putting me in. You know, I hope when I'm not being effective, I get voted out of office. Mm-hmm. Or I've seen it myself. If I don't have the heart for it, I hope that I just, you know, I'll hang it up and I won't run. Mm. But when we have newer bodies, I think there's lessons to be learned. And it's difficult to be a chair. You know, I was president last term. I think Council President Persip's doing a nice job this year.
Mm. There's a lot of weight on those shoulders, though, right? I mean, you're effectively trying to keep things moving. The president certainly does have some power. Most of it is in the way that the meeting is conducted and also how things are placed on the agenda and how things will be debated. But then after that, you're kind of like a ringmaster, right, in some ways.
Yeah, with the agenda, there's a pretty set formula. You know, the president works with the city clerk. Our city clerk, Michelle Benjamin, does an amazing job putting agendas together. And then the council president says, yeah, we're going to move this around, or I'm going to talk to this counselor about what they want to do with it. So it's a set format. To me, the school committee agendas have always baffled me how, like, there's not as much information on them, or there hasn't been in the past. I think since,
as far as like the packet goes, the things that support the documents that support it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I've always had trouble like knowing exactly what was going to be going on. And, you know, it's very routine for them. Mm-hmm. But being an outsider to it, it's not as informative, I think, as like the straightforward city council method. And, you know, I'd like to see things blended a little. I think there are some things this school committee does that's really nice. You know, in the beginning, they can all say the nice things they've done in the community. I think that can throw some positiveness into it. But their agendas are becoming more informed, or having more information on them. But I think we just, you know, there are growing pains going on, and everyone is probably looking that up today to what move the question or call the question means. You know, and next time I think they'll do better with it. But first time something comes up, you know, you can't fault people who are just your neighbors running to help out for not knowing every little piece. And I think, you know, it showed a lot last night to whatever side of the issue you're on. Hey, we were confused on a vote we took. There's a method in place where you can rescind it. Let's at least have the discussion to make sure that what we thought we were voting on is what we actually voted on. And it takes a lot to say, hey, I didn't quite understand it. Let's do this over to make sure it's done right.
Yeah, and that particular issue of releasing the full, I guess, redacted report from the PHS investigation continues to have significant pull in the community both ways, I would say. There are lots of people that are very passionate about wanting to see that entire report released. There are lots of people that say, you know, enough is enough. We've had it with that, and, you know, we're not going to learn anything new from that report. It seems like the school committee is still dealing with that. And, of course, there was a key vote last night to rescind an earlier vote by, I think, a number of 4-2 to rescind, which means that the, whatever decision they took, which seemed to be the motion that was made earlier in the year, was a bit confusing. So the members didn't know exactly what they were voting on in retrospect. They look, was it voting on releasing the report, or was it voting on reviewing the report first and then voting to release it? There were some questions about that. Where do you think this goes from there?
I think the community will still be discussing, you know, release the report, don't release the report. You know, the city council has voted twice to send it over to the school committee to say release some form of the report. I know they voted last night, I believe, to release the summary again with more information from a human resources on their methodology of what could be released and what shouldn't be released. We've had the state weigh in saying don't release this or you could be sued. We've had...
Because essentially it's a personnel report in a way.
Exactly.
It's an investigative report, but it's really on the personnel side. And that usually personnel reports and investigations don't become public, right?
Yeah, almost anywhere you go, you're not going to see a personnel report be a public file. Whether the discussion needed to be more pointed at the beginning so the public knew what to expect of this, but this was basically an internal report to... say, should we be taking discipline here? What should be the steps moving forward?
You're right. I mean, that's kind of the big question to me. It's not so much what happened in the past, because pretty much I think people get an idea of what happened and what continued to happen after. So the question is, did we put in place the kinds of controls and changes necessary so that that same situation in multiple parts doesn't happen again? Are you satisfied that that's been the case?
I think there still needs to be more to come out on how they do their hiring practices and everything else. I'm hoping that's what we elected a school committee to really be looking into to make sure that they're doing their due diligence to make sure none of what happened or allegedly happened happens again. I also know that where applicable, you know, we've seen, and I only get information from the papers. I haven't read the full report because it's not accessible to city councilors.
Right.
It's only open to the school committee members. Where we've seen in the newspapers and the news is where there was something actionable, people are being brought to court and brought up on charges. And they will have their day in court, and that process will play out. And I'm hoping that everything that needed to be exposed was exposed through the legal system, but I haven't read the report, so I can't say what's in there. I don't know what could be redacted. You know, I look forward to reviewing the summary again when it comes back out, because it was taken off the website for a while. But I think this is going to be an ongoing discussion.
I suspect you're right there. I don't think that we've heard the last of this, even though people watching the meeting last night may think that that issue is done. I suspect maybe that we will hear more and see more about that. As long as there's a report available and hasn't been seen. You'll probably hear more about it in the future. Pete White, I want to say we're actually running out of time, amazingly. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they contact you for city council business?
All of our contact information is on the city website, but pwhite@pittsfieldma.gov is the best way to get a hold of me, or 413-329-4194. I only have one phone number for everything, so it'll probably go to voicemail if I'm at work or in a meeting.
And that phone is constantly buzzing, ringing, and off the hook, right?
Yeah.
I want to thank you for being here this morning, as always, joining us on Morning Drive, and we'll have you back again real soon.
All right, thanks, Sean.
Have a great summer.
You too.
All right, take care, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow morning on Morning Drive. I'll be back here again with you live. Take care.